the seventh trumpet. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall sound, the secret of God shall be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. There is a continuance of time specified, namely, in the days of the voice of the angel. That is, the sounding of the last trumpet would be no exception to those which had gone before, but that as they had occupied years in sounding, so the seventh would sound through a succession of years, even until the kingdom of God should be established, as revealed in the writings of the prophets. This is the declared mystery, to the manifestation of which all things are length everywhere triumphant. They were without funds, imperfectly armed and disciplined, and led on by inexperienced generals. They were opposed by well-appointed armies with all the military talent of Europe to direct them, but God's power was with them in a way not visible to flesh. They were contending with his foes and avenging the blood of his saints, therefore no power could withstand them so long as they did not transcend their mission. The history of these events ought to teach politicians that God can punish the destroyers of the earth by an agency which in itself is without strength or wisdom. When he takes the work in hand, the feeble become strong and the poor despise riches. His saints of Media did not regard silver, and as for gold, they delighted not in it. Politicians speculate as though money were omnipotent, and we hear financial reformers predicting the inactivity of Russia and Austria for want of funds. Where did the barbarians procure funds for the overthrow of the Western Empire in the 5th and 6th centuries? Did they not support themselves by the spoil? Let the Russian treasury be as empty as it is said to be, and its expenditure exceed its revenue by double the alleged deficit. It will only operate as a pressure from within, causing her autocrat to enter into the countries and to overflow and pass over, and to enrich himself with the spoil of those he is destined to subdue. The third vial. From among the lowest of the people there arose a military hierarchy headed by a chief who became the sword of God and scourge of Europe. It is scarcely necessary to say that this was Napoleon and his generals. To him, as the man of the earth and sword of the democracy, it was given to carry on the vengeance upon Daniel's fourth beast. He appears preeminent in the pouring out of the third vial upon the rivers and fountains of waters, which under his hand became blood. His celebrated campaigns in the Alpine regions and plains of Italy, abounding in springs, lakes, and rivers, strikingly illustrate this vial of wrath. The Austropapal, or Little Horn, was the principal in the war with whom he had to contend. The Italian fields were the arena of the dreadful massacres of the witnesses by the Holy Roman power, whose mercenaries, on the same Acaldama, received blood to drink at Napoleon's hands. This righteous retribution is the subject of angelic celebration, saying, "Thou art righteous, O Lord, which art and wast and shalt be, because thou hast judged thus. For they have shed the blood of saints and prophets, and thou hast given them blood to drink, for they are worthy." To this, a voice is represented as issuing forth from the symbolic altar, responding in these words, "Even so, Lord God Almighty, true and righteous are thy judgments." This vial began in 1796 with the war against Piedmont, and ended with the destruction of the Little Horn, or Two-Horned Beast's dominion over Italy, and with the establishment of the sovereignty of military democracy of France. The fourth vial. But the vengeance of the earth upon the Little Horn did not stop here. They next proceeded to pour out God's wrath upon the sun of Roman Europe. They had eclipsed him in Italy, and their Corsican chieftain received imperial power, and now in the exercise of it literally scorched men with fire. Being now himself the son of a great part of Europe, he would tolerate no rival. The House of Habsburg still claimed to be the son of the Roman world, which the head of the now imperial democracy resolved should not be. He therefore scorched men with great heat in his German wars. He executed all the wrath of the fourth vial upon the Austrian Empire, till at length the time arrived to fill the beast's kingdom with darkness. This could only be accomplished by a total eclipse of the Roman sun. The fifth vial was therefore poured upon the beast's throne. The vengeance was terrific. The people of the beast gnawed their tongues for pain and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, but repented not of their deeds. The power of the little horn was consumed, but not yet destroyed to the end. The Battle of Austerlitz in 1805 decided the fate of its dominion for a time. Francis of Austria still retained possession of his hereditary domain, which included Hungary and Bohemia, but the Holy Roman Empire, says Sir Walter Scott, having lasted full 1,000 years, was declared to be no more, and of its ancient influence the representation was to be sought for not at Vienna, but at Paris. But the work was yet unfinished, while the papal Jupiter remained temporal sovereign of Rome. Napoleon, having to contend with the British leopard in Spain, the beast and the image deemed it a favourable opportunity to break the yoke of their consumer. Napoleon had required the Pope to declare war against England, but England was too good a friend to receive such treatment. He therefore refused and replied to his demand by hurling the thunders of the Vatican at his head. While Austria, energized by British gold, assembled 500,000 men for the war. This was in 1809. In 5 days, this mighty host was broken and dispersed. The Battle of Wagram reduced the Little Horn once more to inactivity, and the Corsican Avenger obtained leisure to extinguish the image of the beast. By decree dated from the Palace of the Little Horn at Schönbrunn, he annexed the ecclesiastical state of the Kingdom of Italy, and by a second decree dated at Vienna the 17th of May 1809, he suppressed the temporal sovereignty of the Pope, incorporated Rome with the French Empire, declared it to be his second city, appointed a committee of administration for its civil government, and settled a pension on the Pope in his spiritual capacity, all of which came to pass exactly 1,260 years from the capture of Rome by Totila and his Goths. Thus, by the power given to the earth, the dominion of the ten-horned and two-horned beasts and their image was completely taken away till the fall of their consumer. The kingdoms, or horns, of the beast were all reduced to vassalage, while the imperial chief of the democracy created thrones and made kings and princes of whomsoever he pleased. It was a glorious sight to the eye of faith to behold him and his democratic nobles with the beast writhing at their feet. He claimed for his immediate liege subjects a population of 42 million of souls, with Italy, Carniola, and the Illyrian provinces as a portion of his personal empire. His authority was almost absolute in Switzerland. He was lord of the Confederation of the Rhine. The King of Naples was one of his generals, and the peninsula seemed on the verge of final subjugation. Thus, an empire of 800,000 square miles and containing a population of 85 millions, in territory one-fifth part and in number of inhabitants one-half of united Europe, was either in quiet subjection to Napoleon's sceptre or on the point, as was supposed, of becoming so. But the time had not then arrived either for the final destruction of the beast's dominion or for the saints to possess the kingdom forever. Nor indeed are the saints of the median class the persons for whom everlasting dominion is intended. These are merely the consumers and tormentors of the fourth beast, and not the possessors of the kingdom under the whole heaven for ever, even for ever and ever. This is reserved for the saints of the holy city, styled by Daniel the people of the saints. It was necessary, therefore, to energize the prostrate beasts and to enable them once more to prevail against the saints, but not to kill them, as in 1685, for their agency was still needed for the perfecting of the plagues that yet remain to be executed for the tormenting of the little horn to the end. To compass this necessity, God had reserved powers on the east and west of Europe, which had not been subdued. These were the great rival dominions of England and Russia. To the former had been assigned the pouring out the wrath of the second vial upon the sea. England began her work in 1793, and with little interruption made the sea as the blood of a dead man for 22 years. The maritime parts of the beast dominion suffered the vengeance of her power, and so completely did she clear the sea of his ships of war and commerce that it might be said truly of them, every living soul in the sea died, and the ways were ruled by Britain's fleets alone. In attacking Russia, the democracy exceeded the limits of its commission, for the Russian dominion is not yet of the 10-horned beast of the sea or 2-horned beast of the earth. While Russia indeed was combating for the beasts in Italy and Germany, her hosts were at length everywhere defeated. But when they stood upon their own soil, God shielded them from the avenger, whose strength was wasted by his frost and snow. Repelled within the limits of Roman Europe, the power of Napoleon dried up more rapidly than it prevailed. By the armies of Russia on the east and by those of England on the south, the beasts were again enabled to stand. The eagle fled before the leopard and the bear, who at length wrested him from the prey and restored it to liberty and dominion. Just 1,260 years from the defeat and death of Tyus, the last of the Gothic kings of Italy, and the defeat of the Franks and Alemanni there. Thus far, the seventh trumpet had sounded with terrible effect against the Greco-Roman dragon, which was plagued not only in Europe but in Egypt and Syria. In 1815, peace was finally proclaimed, the Holy Alliance formed, the Holy Roman Empire resuscitated, and the papal Jupiter reinstated on his throne, and the rest of Europe portioned out according to the interests of the old dynasties of the beast and the good pleasure of the Congress of Vienna. But the beast and his allies can settle nothing upon a permanent basis any more. Forever, in its decrees, extends only to the end of the blast of the seventh trumpet. The Holy Alliance was pledged to keep down the democracy and to maintain the order in which the blasphemers of God's name and the destroyers of the earth delight. But after a few years, God dissolved it like a thing of air. The sixth vial. The time at length arrived to make preparation for the restoration of Israel. The abomination that maketh desolate had prevailed under divers forms from the celebrated epoch 529 to 533, beginning the third year of Justinian's reign upon the throne of Constantinople. The dragon, of whose dominion this city became the seat after Constantinople transferred the government from Rome, was the desolator of the Hebrew commonwealth. He destroyed the city and temple, scattered Judah, and consumed the land with fire and sword. These have been its works for nearly 1,900 years. But of this long period, a portion has been separated which should reach to the time when that determined should be poured upon the desolator. Now, that which is determined is the wrath of God, contained in the sixth vial, and which is appointed to be poured out upon the eastern division of the Greco-Roman dragon. When we look into the history of our own time, it is easy to perceive that the sixth vial began in 1820 to 1823. The other vials had been exhausted principally upon the western division of the empire, with the exception of the second, which affected the east and west alike. The sixth, however, is poured out primarily upon the east, and drying up the desolator's dominion there, pours on until its stream is commingled with that of the seventh, by which both the east and the west are wrapped in a universal conflagration which terminates in the final destruction of the little horn or two-horned beast and his prophet. The subjection of the ten kingdoms to the dragon of Constantinople, and lastly, their combined overthrow at the Battle of Armageddon by the Lord of Hosts. The details of the sixth and seventh vials are amplified in that portion of the Apocalypse, beginning at the 14th verse of the 17th chapter and ending at the 6th of the 20th. But to return to the 6th. The 6th trumpet brought up the four dynastic powers from the Euphrates, which was the western boundary of their domain. They crossed this river under Alp Arslan, who at the head of an immense cavalry invaded the Roman dragon. After an hour, a day, a month and a year from the invasion, that is 360 years added to 30, added to 1 year and 30 days, which is equal to 391 years 30 days, the period of Turkish preparation to seize the dragon's throne was complete. On the 29th of May 1453, Constantinople fell into the hands of the Turks, who have retained it to this day. The predecessor of Alp Arslan was Toghrul Beg, who was constituted lieutenant of the Prophet by the last of the caliphs. Toghrul's successors down to the last sultan inherited this lieutenancy, by which they were regarded as the political and spiritual head of the Mohammedan world. The judgment of the sixth vial is to take away his supremacy and to wrest from him the dragon's scepter. This is termed drying up the waters of the Euphrates, which occurs for the purpose of bringing about the restoration of Israel, who by the constitution of Sinai are a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, and to whom belongs the adoption through which the kings of the east are provided. Now, when the Turks obtained possession of Constantinople, the Catholics were doomed to one of three things: to turn Muslim, to pay tribute, or to suffer death. And for apostates there was no mercy. In June 1844, which was 391 years and 30 days from the capture of the city, and the imposition of these conditions upon the conquered, religious liberty and the right of apostasy were conceded at the instance of the Western powers. This was 782 years and 2 months from Alp Arslan's invasion. These facts suggested to me a principle of calculation in relation to the passing away of the Sultan's supremacy. It was 396 years, 131 days from Tarug Beg's investiture by the commander of the faithful to the taking of Constantinople. I argued, therefore, from the analogy before us, that it will be 396 years, 131 days after the capture, to the time when the Sultan would be about to lose his supremacy at the hand of Russia, who was then fully occupied in the Hungarian War. This time would terminate the 29th of September 1849. I made this statement in my lectures in various parts of England and Scotland, when all the country was expressing its sympathy for the Hungarians, and the news of their victories abundant. My calculation was too late by 10 days. All relations were broken off between Russia and Turkey on the 19th of September instead of the 29th. This event was a recommencement of sorrows for the Sublime Porte. The following events will give the reader some idea of the manner in which the sixth vial has been pouring out on the great river Euphrates. In 1820, the Greeks rebelled against the Sultan, and after several years' war, succeeded, by the aid of the Western powers, in establishing the Kingdom of Greece. In 1826, the Janissaries revolted, and thousands of them were massacred by order of the Sultan. In 1827, Turkey lost 100 ships in the Battle of Navarino. In 1829, war with Russia and a general revolt through Albania. From 1821 to 1831, ravages of cholera and plague and depopulation of the eastern provinces. From 1829 to 1848, the Algerine War, by which Algeria was annexed to France. In 1839, Egypt and Syria wrested from the Porte by Mehmet Ali. War between Egypt and Turkey, in which the Turkish fleet revolts to Egypt. In 1844, massacres by the Turks in Syria, and exterminating war between the Maronites and the Druses there. And in 1848, Russia moved her forces south and took up her position in the Turkish principalities of the Danube, to be in readiness to avail herself of subsequent events. All these disasters so weakened the Porte that the dominion of the Sultan could not be preserved for a month, but for the jealousies of England and France against Russia, which only awaits the opportunity of replanting the Greek cross on the Dome of St. Sophia. 10 years after the commencement of the sixth vial, its second series of plagues began to affect the political constitution of the beast. By the judgment of the sixth, a ninth horn was brought out upon the Greek or Roman dragon, which at present wears a crown. This is the Greek kingdom. But there was still another wanting to make up the ten. This tenth horn was brought to light by the second series, whose beginning was marked by the revolution in Paris in 1830. The Congress of Vienna had constituted the Kingdom of the Netherlands, part of which lay in Roman Europe and part of it, namely Holland, beyond it. The sixth vial, however, paid no respect to the political geography of the Holy Alliance. The beast required 10 crowned horns to answer the prophetic symbol at the epoch of its destruction, for they are then to be unjewelled, that they may become the vassal horns of the Greek or Roman dragon. Hence, when the air of the Roman world was touched, an electric shock passed through all its kingdoms, producing voices and thunderings and lightnings on every side. A thunderbolt fell upon the Netherlands, striking the throne and dividing it into two. The result was the establishment of the Kingdom of Belgium as the tenth horn of the beast. It is unnecessary for me to enumerate the ten horns, for they are the same as the 10 toe kingdoms of Nebuchadnezzar's image, which are already named. The constitution of France was changed, Louis-Philippe, the citizen king, being substituted by a ruse upon the democracy for the elder branch of the Bourbons imposed upon them by the Holy Alliance. The Kingdom of Poland was suppressed and incorporated as a conquered province with the Russian Empire. In Spain and Portugal, their several thrones were disputed by pretenders, and even England, though not included in either of the beasts or in the dragon of the time of the end, did not escape the vibrations of the air. Events on the continent gave a salutary impulse to the reform movement and passed the Bill, 1832. In 1848, 18 years had passed away since the blending of these first and second periods. 2 years before, a new pope was elected to the papal throne. He intended to rule, he said, according to the New Testament. His professions deceived the simple-hearted and alarmed the despots of the kingdoms. When Satan undertakes to cast out Satan, his kingdom is sure to be convulsed. The reforms of Pius IX satisfied nobody and tended only to create a longing after liberty and a determination to free the country from the rule of priests. The hopes of the democracy throughout Europe were inflamed, and the earth began to tremble until, in 1848, every throne was shaken to its foundations. The events of this wonderful year are too recent to require to be chronicled in this place. It will be enough to say that the democracy broke loose and commenced a movement which, though it has been restrained to prevent it progressing too rapidly, cannot be suppressed until the little horn or the two-horned beast and his prophet be destroyed to the end and the dominion of the ten-horned beast be taken away. The events of February 1848 have developed the unclean spirits of the sixth vial. These are precursory to the earthquake of the Apocalypse, chapter 9, verse 19. Its first shocks will be terrific, but they are only the premonitions of worse to come. The earthquake or political convulsion which followed the resurrection and ascension of the witnesses in 1789 was awful, as all know who are versed in the history of the time, but that fell far short of what God is preparing for Europe. The tumults of the peoples and the tempests whose howlings are heard even now are thus intimated by the prophet, saying, "There shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation to that same time, and at that time Israel shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to everlasting shame and contempt." This time of trouble is contemporary with the resurrection of a portion of the dead. It is the epoch of Israel's deliverance, both of Ishmael and Isaac's seeds, and of the casting down of the thrones of the beast. The convulsion which affects their overthrow is described by the apostle as a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. Ascertain the calamities of former ages, and however terrible they may appear, this will exceed them all. The flood, Sodom, Egypt, Jerusalem, the fall of the Roman Empire, were all judgments which chill the heart and make the blood run cold to contemplate. But times have now come over the world which will have been hitherto unsurpassed. The wrath of the sixth and seventh vials, which remains, is about to overwhelm the nations with torment and sorrow, for the cup of their iniquity is full. The more remote effect of past events will be the subdivision of Roman Europe, styled the great city, into three parts. This division will be the result of war, for which the governments are now preparing themselves, perhaps unwittingly. The tripartite division is attended by the fall of the cities of the nations. As it is written, the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. That is, as I take it, that in consequence of the approaching contest, growing out of the frog power manifestation of 1848, the ten kingdoms will lose their independence, by which a new partition of the Roman world will ensue, and that when this is brought to pass, events will flow more directly eastward. But before the cities fall, or as Daniel expresses it, the thrones are cast down, Rome comes in for her final overthrow. I say before, because these kings are to be parties to her tormenting and are to bewail and lament for her, to them, unexpected doom. Judgment hath then to be given to Zion, for as yet she hath in no part performed her mission. Then are prostrated the horns, the little horn, and the image of the beast, and consumed their dominion. But in connection with this earthquake of the last vial, she has to destroy it to the end. They are repressed for the moment, but things are progressing in such a direction as to bring the power of the democracy to bear against Austria and Rome, perhaps through France and Prussia. Footnote reads, "And so it has come to pass, 1866 to 1870. Back to the text. When they have done their work, the earth must be again repressed and suppressed, as they were in 1814 and 1815, by a power, however, that will subdue all for itself. There will be no more resuscitation of the old governments, but all things will be absorbed into one continental dominion upon the old Roman domain. In the midst of this great commotion, Britain promotes the colonization of Judea, which is an event pertaining to the sixth vial. By this time, Turkey is no more, and Constantinople acknowledges the scepter of the autocrat. England and the Russian lead on the world to the day of doom. They advance their hosts to the winepress without the city, which is called Armageddon in the Hebrew tongue, and geographically situated in the land of Israel. There, as a cloud to cover the land, the armed multitudes are assembled and preparing to decide the fate of Asia by the sword. But there falls upon them a great hail out of heaven. Their power is broken. Judah is saved. Messiah appears as a thief. The Roman dragon is bound. And the restoration of the kingdom and throne of David is commenced." Such is an outline of the results to be brought about by the mighty earthquake, whose premonitions have already revealed what is hereafter to come to pass. In the coming tumult, great Babylon comes into remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island disappears, and the mountains are not found, and there falls upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blaspheme God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof will be exceeding great.